On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. And on the Commons today, we have an old friend with us, Richard Olton from Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, as always.
And you had a big day yesterday. Is it all over with
just,
now?
Just one other big day after a lot of other big days. I've been in court so many times, I'm getting very accustomed to it.
Well, is it over with now, Richard?
Is over with the court process?
Yes.
Yeah, unless they find something else that they want to take me to court over, I think it probably is.
Well, let's recap a little bit and tell our listeners what happened.
Okay.
And we've got, you know, I've got a few clips from the court that we're going to be playing on the air today. That's a brand new one for us here, so we're sort of breaking new ground.
Well, I don't know how far back you want to go.
you put up a flagpole
a couple lines. I started in Memorial Day 1999 when I put up a Purple Heart flag, because I have a Purple Heart, and an American flag on two temporary poles next to my house, based on an agreement with the developer that I could have a flagpole, and given that I didn't build a house on that lot, I had kept that lot as a park-like setting with a pond and a waterfall. I had developed it more like a common area, park area would be. And the next day, there was an emergency board meeting, and they put in writing that my American flag and Purple Heart flag constituted a visual nuisance that could threaten property values. And that kind of started it all. And Richmond Paper picked up on it. And the next wisdom came down was that a comment from the management people that the Purple Heart flag was no different than a Purple Barney statue that had been banned from another yard as a visual nuisance. I saw a visual nuisance, and they weren't going to treat a Purple Heart flag on Memorial Day any different than they treated a Purple Barney statue. Both threatened property values. So that kind of started the war. And 4 years later, we're here today where it's basically concluded in court after going all the way to the Virginia Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court.
And neither courts would take the case, would they?
No, they wouldn't.
Do you have any thoughts on why that might be?
Oh, yeah, I think it's real clear. It's basically the legal system and the basic codified laws of the country and basically every state not recognizing private government for what it is, private government. A point's been reached where you have governments. You no longer have property owner associations. You now have governments, and they have taxing authority, police authority. In fact, the clearest thing, I wouldn't realize it until now, but they actually have they have their own jailhouses, literally. Yesterday I was faced with incarceration, and it would not have been incarceration by the judge. It would have been incarceration by the homeowners association. The really strange thing is, and you got to kind of bear with it to understand it, but the hearing yesterday that I had was not at the initiation of the judge. It was at the initiation of the homeowners association, with the homeowners association having the power basically to put my wife and I in jail, and the judge really having no choice but to go along with it.
Why do you think they didn't? Obviously, you're out. I mean, we're not doing this from jail.
No, I'm out, but I've got another fine, and this is literally a fine. This is not even labeled as attorney's fees or anything. I basically have a fine now that has been imposed by a Virginia court, and my fine is $2,600, not payable to the Commonwealth of Virginia, but my fine is payable to the Homeowners Association.
Now, that really surprised me.
So, I mean, they've got every power. They have every power that a government has but with no constitutional protections whatsoever.
Now, in Virginia, they have there's a $900 limit because they can only fine you $10 a day for a continuing violation for a period of 90 days.
That's based on their own, I guess you could call it their own justice of the peace court system. In other words, they don't have to go to court at all. I mean, I don't know of another authority that can fine you at all except a homeowners association without some court process. But in Virginia, they can fine you up to $900 without ever going to court. But if they go to court, then they can pretty much fine you anything, I guess, as long as the judge is going to go along with it, because the judge yesterday fined us $2,600 payable to the Homeowners Association, not related to expenses, costs, or anything else, just simply a pure fine.
And that really surprised me, because the judge went ahead and gave the association everything they wanted.
About $170,000, yeah.
Everything they wanted. And then...
Later, fine in on top.
He turned around and gave them a fine. Now, the attorney that represented the association, Moriarty, mm-hmm. he was on a show up here, and
right.
on a call-in show, and I called him, and he was talking about, oh, you got to give people due process. And I said, where does it say where do the words due process appear in the Virginia Property Owners Association Act? And he said, blah, 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 you know. And then, you know, the question was, due process in front of whom? And I said, you're talking about a kangaroo court here. You should have seen him, Richard. He just went absolutely nuts. He did not like that question at all. But yesterday he actually stood up in court and he said, we're not seeking to incarcerate.
Right. He basically told the judge what the game plan would be. Don't put him in jail.
Yeah. Why, that would have been...
And then the judge just came back 5 minutes later and said... We're not going to put him in jail.
Yeah,
so it was kind of interesting because the cue came from the lawyer on whether we would go to jail or not.
What do you think if he had asked for a jail sentence, that the judge would have granted that?
The way that process works is it's really almost, I don't know how to word it right, it's almost of a courtesy to the party that has called the hearing. What the penalty will be. I mean, they get to decide if there's a hearing and what they will ask for, and if the judge wants to go along with them, then they get it. And in this case, the original filings and everything had asked that we both be immediately and indefinitely jailed, and then when we got in there, I guess maybe with the press and all that, they decided jail wouldn't look so good, so they changed it to basically accept a fine instead. But payable to the homeowner association.
That just absolutely floored me. I mean, if anything surprised me yesterday, that did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not the only one who was being threatened with incarceration. There's another lady in Houston who has a yard that doesn't conform. It's sort of, she lives in a middle class neighborhood and.
Right.
Her yard sort of belongs more in the upper class, and of course her neighbors don't like it. So the judge in that case said, you know, we're gonna jail you again for contempt of court because she didn't trim it back to his liking. And now I've forgotten my train of thought. But what do you think that any homeowner would ever really be incarcerated, or is this just another?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. It depends on the state. I mean, you've got states, I mean, I love Virginia. I've lived here for 25 years. But Virginia and Texas and a couple others, they're basically Wild West states in terms of law and order. And it really doesn't matter what happens, what you do, but, you know, everything's got to be an example. The Judge Harris had a case just before me yesterday where the sentencing guidelines called for 1 year in jail. And the guy basically had an accident and caused the death of another person. And he got 9 years instead of the sentencing guidelines. This is about an hour before me. It was in the Richmond paper today. He got 9 years instead of 1 year because Judge Harris said, we're going to make an example of this. And that's one of his favorite lines is we're going to make an example. So he goes beyond all the sentencing guidelines very frequently. And in our case, I mean, I think that if we'd gone to jail, my wife and I could well have been in jail for a pretty long period of time. But the other thing I think you need to realize is that judge yesterday had no regard for whether he was destroying our lives or not, because he really does no way to know whether my wife and I can afford to pay $170,000 or whether that would force us into bankruptcy force us into foreclosure on our house, cause us to lose our businesses. He has no way to know that. That's a heck of a lot of money. And it's not normal to have a penalty for what we did that would rank up to $170,000. When you get to that level, at that point, you're not trying to find somebody. You're trying to destroy a person. And thank God that we're able to bear that burden. Because if we couldn't, we would literally lose our house, lose our businesses, and our lives would be destroyed. We'd be put back to where we were when we got out of high school, I guess, start all over again. And he could care less about that. Right now, we have to come up with, I don't even know the amount my wife knows it, something like $50,000 or $60,000 in the next 10 days.
Yeah, that's what he wanted.
And he could care less. I mean, he doesn't care at all if he destroys a person's life for the protection of the property values of Wyndham. Which, you know, I did a little calculation on that thing, and I thought about it, and in terms of protecting property values, I mean, there's about 1,600 homes out there, and they're worth at least $350,000 each. That's conservative. That's something like $560 million. If this whole publicity thing has had an adverse impact, even at 1% of property value, that's almost $6 million of loss of property values. I can't really see how this thing has protected property values. I know what it's done. It's put money in Moriarty's pocket, that's for sure.
That's exactly what's happened. But suppose things had turned around and you had ultimately won this.
Well, it still would have had a tremendous adverse impact on property values.
Well, that's just it. Your neighbors would have had to have borne the cost.
Well, they did bear the cost. They bore the cost of probably another $30,000 of attorney's fees that haven't been compensated because it was all the attorney consultation time on how to deal with 2020 and all those sorts of things.
How to deal with 2020?
Yeah, there was a lot of the bills related to the politics of the whole thing and how to deal with the General Assembly and issues like that. That were being paid at, now I guess the rate now is $210 an hour.
So,
but the judge doesn't ask, why do you have three lawyers in the courtroom at a total of $630 an hour, when you could do the same thing with one lawyer. But he didn't challenge any of the bills. I got an interesting email about, property values from a guy that I never met in my life and never heard from before. His name is Kevin Ramsdale, R-A-M-S-D-E-L-L. I can read you a little bit.
Sure. I'd love to hear.
And this is about the third person that's told me the same thing, that they're all Wyndham residents. Goes on, after years of living in Wyndham and seeing all the bullshit going on in the community, the hassles you've been having for trying to fly the American flag, the Wyndham Millstone pool garbage, that's a little internal thing, the militant moms who have nothing better to do than try to enforce their rules on others in the neighborhood, the constant question of, did you get that approved? From people, when you attempt to make any kind of upgrade to your home, my family and I have decided to move out of Wyndham in Henrico County. My new home site is in the middle of 5 acres and will ensure my right to not only hoist my American flag on a pole if I so choose, but enjoy the freedom of not having to deal with any neighborhood associations. I wish you luck in your continued battle with Wyndham. So I got that, and I emailed back to him, again, taken just out of context, but a small part of it. Thanks for your email. We think the folks in Wyndham need to realize what they have created. They are getting far from the intended plan for homeowners and associations. Instead of the desired intention of protection of property values, they're creating an ever-increasing resistance to buying into controlled communities in general, and particularly to buying into Wyndham.
That's right.
You're not the first person that's told us that they've moved from Wyndham due to the oppressive nature of, as you call them, the militant moms. Many others have said to us that they've just simply and quietly passed by Wyndham when deciding on what community to live in. So I put on that we have fought this fight for all Americans, and we hope that you would join us to the extent of giving permission to include your insights concerning life in Wyndham in the next newsletter, which I've been sending these out to all the homes in Wyndham. And he said, sure, go ahead. But he replied, he said, yes, you can include whatever pieces of email you deem relevant. We're still in the process of building a new home, so we're still in Wyndham at this point. Unfortunately, we'll have to be stuck here at least another 4 to 6 months. Lucky for me, I travel extensively. And, I've had other people have told me that they've sold their homes in Wyndham because of the oppressive nature of the Homeowners Association. And I've had many other people tell me that they've just not even bothered to look at Wyndham. And the folks there need to know, and all these communities have these oppressive homeowner associations, need to know that instead of protecting property values, they're actually hurting property values. I had a realtor tell me yesterday that she lost a contract on a home in Windham.
Yeah, I was there.
When it hit the press, the people were new to the area, weren't aware of it,
uh-huh.
researched it a little bit on the Internet to find out what was going on, and canceled the purchase contract.
You would not believe how many times I pick up my phone, and the first words out of the caller's mouth is, I will never live in a homeowners association again. And then they proceed to tell me what their problem is, and that's, you know, they're calling for some help. But that's the way so many of these people start out. Problem is that when they go looking, there's not a whole lot.
Oh, you're in a different area, yeah.
Yeah.
We still have more choices here, but you're really oppressed up there in terms of your choices.
Oh, it's in excess of 90% of what they're doing. 90% of existing housing is in an association. That's in Fairfax County. I'm sure that it's much, much higher in Arlington and Alexandria, because that's known as Condo Canyon. I mean, it's just condos all up and down, all over the place.
Well,
and the sad thing, go ahead.
I was going to end. I wrote back to Kevin. This is my closing.
Yes.
Dear Kevin, thanks. This victory is not to be found in the courtroom. The real victory will only be found in the hearts and minds of the people. Wyndham's militant moms, or as 2020 called them, the tyrants of taste, have lost that battle. We have won regardless of, or more so, because of, the court's rulings. Our good fight for the hearts and minds of the people will continue endlessly. So we're back at it again. We're not going to let go. But I think this whole thing has actually been very expensive in terms of the cost to me, but it's been definitely a victory of awareness. People are more and more aware. And, again, I have a lot of realtors. I do a lot of real estate work in the office, and many of them are commenting on how home purchasers are now demanding to see every document related to the homeowner associations prior to entering into contracts, and after reviewing them are often deciding not to buy into a planned community unless it's one of those that has been around for maybe 30 years, like the last community I was in that had about a one-page document that said you couldn't have an exposed concrete block foundation or a gravel driveway, and that was about the only thing that was restricted. Beyond that, everything was up to people's free choice.
You mean you were allowed to hang your laundry outside? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I get a lot of emails. It's funny you said that, because I got another one here yesterday. Said a gentleman apparently been in the neighborhood. His name is Chris Chapin, Chapin, from Henrico County. Regardless of what they say, the real issue, the pole, the flag, or so they say, it's still absurd that you're not allowed to have your flagpole. And then he goes on. He thinks the whole thing is lame. And he came to the neighborhood. He said, did you know one of your neighbors on a street in a subdivision across from you had a pair of boxer shorts with flags with hearts glued on it on March 6th as I drove through many streets in Windham? I drove there to see how many American flags were flying. I could only find three, but I did find boxer shorts with hearts flying off the pole. And that was 3 weeks after Valentine's Day. Talk about an eyesore and visual nuisance. This is interesting, touching in a way. Then I went back to sit in front of your home again. I've done this several times since this mess started. I looked at the pole, at the beautiful flag, and wondered why anyone ever complained why a flagpole would be on a list of cannot-haves in any neighborhood in the United States of America.
Well, in fact, the Virginia legislature did come back, and they did enact the Wyndham flag bill. And because apparently, you know, having given all these powers to associations, having enacted all these enabling statutes, they all of a sudden said, oh, wait a minute, we didn't intend for that. But the Wyndham flag bill didn't help you at all.
No, because you're in a county court system that I think is very political. And I think that the proof of that was the fact that just before we went to trial, the judge decided we wouldn't have a jury trial because he already had his mind made up, and he knew that the jury would rule in my favor, and he would have to overrule the jury in order to go the way he intended to go, so he got rid of the jury. And I don't think any judge that wasn't being totally vindictive would ever have caused us to pay $170,000 and come to the literally up to the door of the jailhouse. I mean, we were literally inches from going into jail on this situation, unless there was a a real desire to give a very, very strong message. But I don't think it was a message from the legal system. I think it was a message from the political system.
Oh, he was. Can we take just a second? We're going to listen to a clip from. You know, you went into court. You weren't in there very long. I'm just going to fill in. I mean, you know what happened, but I just want to give the listeners an idea of what happened. The association attorney stood up and gave his little spiel. And, you know, you were called to the stand. You testified under oath. And then the judge just went off on this diatribe. And the Richmond papers called it a tongue-lashing, I think. And,
right.
It, you know, and for all of the homeowners out there who, you know, you've been listening to this show and you've been hearing what we've been saying, now listen to what the judge had to say.
This case, from the beginning, as we sit here today, is about nothing other than you complying with the covenants that you agreed to. Nobody forced you to do that.
No.
This case is about nothing else.
No.
That's what it was from day one, and that's what it is today.
The covenants you agreed to.
Right. Covenants, as in a religious
it has nothing to do other than the covenants you agreed to. And here's another question.
This case is about nothing from day one until today about you living up to your agreement. The law...
That noise you hear is me disagreeing with him vehemently. No. Judge, you're wrong. You're wrong. You didn't agree to that. Would you have agreed to that?
No. Again, you got to know my history a little bit. I think some of them do, but I'm a Purple Heart veteran. I extended my enlistment to serve in Vietnam with the Marines, and I bought the lot next door specifically not to build a home on it, but to put a waterfall pond, a koi pond, and a pretty water flagpole with the American flag next to it. And the developer agreed to that. We have letters exchanged back and forth saying this, but when it came to court, the court said that those letters didn't matter. And actually, the developer's vice president testified that not only did they not matter, but even if they were proven to exist or had been signed by him, because they were my letters to him saying this is what we agreed to, even if he had signed a contract that said I could build that flagpole on that lot, that it still would not be an enforceable contract because the covenants would override my agreement with the developer. So in other words, if you buy into a planned community and come to a written agreement with the developer to make a utilization of your property that is somewhat at variance with the covenants, that contract that you thought you had to buy your land is totally voided and it's overridden by the covenants.
And so
does that make sense?
No, actually, it really and truly doesn't because... You know, the judge was talking about your agreement and what you agreed to. And he sort of made it sound like anybody who dared try to protect their rights was vile. And I object to that. I really have a hard time with that one, Richard.
Well, I do too, but I think you can accept things again. I mean, if you realize what you're dealing with, you're dealing with a politically appointed judge and a county government that is really, really influenced by the power of these developers and these homeowner associations. I realize you're in a more mature environment up there in terms of the homeowner associations have been there for a while, but...
Oh, no, they're building them.
But if you look at Henrico County right now at the latest development right near us, the county government literally... Talk about an amenity package to say, gee, let's go live in Twin Hickory, which is the development near us. It's the same developer, H.H. Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
The county government gave Twin Hickory, which is only about 800 homes, a middle school,
yeah,
right in the middle of the community, a high school named after the community,
mm-hmm,
an elementary school,
mm-hmm,
a county park, and a county library, all paid for. No pre-offers or anything like this. Just totally paid for with county taxpayers' money sitting right in the middle of the community so that the developer can advertise, oh, come live in Twin Hills. you can have that influence over the public schools and the public library system and the public park system, why shouldn't we assume they have the same influence over the Henrico County courts?
I never even thought about the Henrico County courts or any other court system, but you're absolutely right, I think.
Well, for some reason, the judge had his mind made up before the case ever went to trial. So,
but you did take the poll down before, not on March 1st, but...
No, I took it down before the actual hearing date, right.
Yeah. Well, if you hadn't, what do you think would have happened?
Oh, I think we would have been sitting in jail.
Do you think they would have risked that kind of publicity?
Well, the only thing else they would have done, I mean, I think the judge had no mercy in terms of the financial impact. I think he's totally willing to destroy my family financially. So maybe he would have fined us, another $1,000 per day for each one of us. That would have been $52,000. And then another $1,000 a day for each one of us, my wife and I both, until it came down. At the rate of that, if we stayed in jail for another month, it would be another $60,000. So that would have been $130,000 in fines right there. I mean, the judge knows that at some point he's going to break us financially. I mean, that's basically what the judge tried to do. The judge tried to break us financially, and he really has no way to know if he succeeded or not. Thank God he hasn't succeeded, but he's come awfully close to, a point where we need to go through the major life changes, because we've got a big mortgage on that house and a lot of bills to pay. And we've got, as I told you before, I have 25 full-time employees and my wife has 15, so we've got 40 families that are dependent on our businesses for their income. He came very close to destroying a major income stream for 40 families and, putting us into bankruptcy. But thank God it didn't happen.
No, But
that's the power, and it's, I don't even think it's the judge's power. I think it's the judge speaking for the homeowners association. Anyone that tries to take a case like this to court in Virginia needs to know that, if you're of modest means, they'll probably cost you $20,000, and that will break you financially. If you've got some money, then you could probably figure if the judge thinks it takes $1 million to break you, then it'll cost you $1 million.
Well, it's always been economic warfare. I mean, it's always been the associations have...
Yeah, but the legal system, the legitimate legal system, doesn't work that way. If you go to court and the Commonwealth of Virginia is going after you for something, the whole issue is not to make a person destitute and put them out in the street. But the point is that in the legal system, the homeowner association has all this extra legal power that the legitimate court system doesn't even have.
That's right. That's right.
That's what's so amazing to me. So I'm just determined to keep fighting this thing, but
it's
going to take quite a while for us to try to recover from this. I mean, you've got to realize too that we're not talking about some family that just inherited a bunch of money or something. We're doing okay, but my wife is an immigrant from China, and her family were war refugees. My dad went to the eighth grade and worked 48 years in the same factory, and I used the GI Bill and went to City University and State University all the way to get my education. So what money we've had, it sounds like I'm blowing this off, like money doesn't matter.
You've
money matters, but we don't live for money. We live to do the right thing in life and take good care of our kids and provide for our family and work for our community. And by doing that, my dad always taught me, and my mom too, that you do the right thing and you work hard and don't worry about how much money you're going to make. Just do the right thing and all the other things will follow. And that's what's happened in my wife's case and mine. We've worked real hard and we've had good financial success. But not because we pursue the dollar, but because we try to do the right thing. So, this is not some big inheritance that we have or something. This is all hard-earned money. But it's gone, and, we just work hard and do the right thing, and the rewards will come back again. So we're optimistic about that. But it's a tremendous hit to have to pay, $170,000 out to try to fly an American flag. And you know the story, especially when you flew the northernmost American flag in Vietnam, 1 mile from North Vietnam, and literally got wounded by artillery fire trying to put it back up after the North Vietnamese knocked it down.
Yeah.
And now I'm back here in Virginia, and what the North Vietnamese artillery couldn't succeed to do in Vietnam, the Henrico County judge, in speaking as the mouthpiece for the Homeowners Association, has been able to do. Take my flag down. It's amazing.
The flag's not down. The pole's down, right?
Well,
we still got a flag.
No, it's not about the flag. Remember, it's about the pole.
It's about the pole.
People are
constantly,
you're so wrong. People constantly are putting flagpoles up, not to fly flags, but just because they want flagpoles.
That's right. You just have a flagpole standing up there like a great big
people putting flagpoles up all the time and then never putting a flag on them. The reason people have flagpoles is because they want to have that pole. To fly a flag.
That's right. They just want this thing sticking out of the ground. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back. Don't go away.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
In the land of the free, in the home of the brave, an American flag flying proudly for all to see brings tears to the eyes of anyone who fought to defend this great country. Flying the flag is a privilege that every patriotic American holds dear to their heart. It is a tribute to those who died believing freedom was more valuable than life. H.H. Hunt, the developer of the Wyndham community of Richmond, Virginia, doesn't believe the residents of Wyndham have the right to fly their flag without his approval. H.H. Hunt took Richard Olton, a decorated combat veteran, to court for flying the American flag in a manner that Hunt considered a visual nuisance. This is a sad event in our history. We urge you to contact your elected officials. Call the governor, lieutenant governor, the speaker of the Virginia House, your state senator, and your state delegate. Tell them that you will not allow H.H. Hunt or anyone else to take the right to fly our flag in a respectful manner away from us. Do it today.
Visit us at AmericanFlagTrial.com.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with me today is Richard Olton. Richard, I think we just played that ad probably for the last time, but I've played it every single show since you gave it to me. And unfortunately, the court battle is over with, right?
Yeah, but I think that the issue is certainly not dead. It's not going to go away.
Oh no, the issue
is the time. This is the time of the year when you make your contacts with the legislators, because when they go into session, you can't get their attention.
Is that the next step?
Oh sure, it has to be.
Okay. Now there was a bill a couple of years ago, and that didn't quite make it somehow.
Well, again, unless people get close to it, they don't realize how it really works. And I can't see any other way for it to be organized, really. But basically, the General Assembly in the state of Virginia, most states the same size, or even smaller states, they really don't have full-time legislators. They've got part-time legislators, which is goes back to when times were simple, like in the 1820s or something. So what happens is basically all the laws are made during the summertime, and all the agreements and deals are made during the summertime. Then when you come into session, which is maybe 8 weeks to 10 weeks or so at the most, 8 weeks, everything's just rush through,
yeah.
And everything's all bundled up and packaged into these big blocks of bills, and there's really not much being done. The deals are made beforehand. The decisions are made beforehand. So the time to work on legislative change is not much after the previous session has ended. And the problem you'll have with the bill that went through before is what happens in legislative process is that you get subcommittees and committees and subcommittees that are set up to deal with specific topics or specific areas of legislation. And again, that makes sense. I don't know how else to do it. But what happens is that you get people that are very, very much influenced by a trade or an industry or in this case, the realtors, home builders associations, developers, they will get a lot of financial support from that industry, and then they'll make sure that they work their way into key committee assignments that will allow them to control the legislation that relates to that industry or profession or trade or whatever it is. And in this case, you've got some people like a lady named Terry Suit from Virginia Beach area.
That's right.
That is really a key person on a little tiny subcommittee on housing, which is a subcommittee of another committee, which is called General Laws. And they try to pigeonhole different legislative enactments or bills into areas that fit based on committees and then subcommittees.
Mm-hmm.
And the Property Owners Association Act, which is the one that's the key thing, has been pigeonholed historically under General Laws Committee, Subcommittee on Housing. And Subcommittee on Housing, you're down to only about four or five people. So when you only have four or five people, that they're basically deciding what legislation is enacted. And just bear with me for a second on this, and you'll see the logic of it. If it can't get out of that little Subcommittee on Housing, it can't get to the General Laws Committee. If it can't get to the General Laws Committee, it can't get to the full House of Delegates, is what everyone thinks of, the 100-member House of Delegates. Well, it will never get there unless it gets out of that little four or five-person committee. And Terry Suit makes sure that anything that has any ability to protect people's rights in relationship to homeowner associations or property owner associations gets absolutely killed in her little subcommittee that she's on. And that one or two people in that committee prevent any legislative enactments from ever coming out to the full floor of the House of Delegates to be voted on.
Is there any way that we can get a whole number of legislators to sponsor something?
Well, that's the only time that it works. Is it, what happened with the Wyndham Flag bill was that there was so much popular support for that the few people on the Housing Subcommittee of General Laws, and that's not on the Senate side. Senate side's wonderful. They really are looking out for the people, and they are not in the pocket of the developers. But the people on General Laws Committee and the House of Delegates in Virginia are all in the pocket of the developers and the realtors and the homeowner associations and probably some of the law firms and all that do a lot of work in that area. And you can't get anything through the House Subcommittee on General Laws unless it's got tremendous popular support, where people are actually afraid that they might be seen by the voters as being taking a position that the voters are really very much against. And when it came to the Wyndham Flag Bill back in 2000, there was so much popular support for that it did succeed in getting through General Laws Committee of the House. And then once that happened, it passed 140-0 because the people of Virginia wanted the law to pass. And so it passed 140-0. But most of these bills, no matter how much the people want the bills to pass, they never get out because some little powerful little influenced group that's gotten a lot of contributions from particular trades or professions or whatever, they manage to kill it. And that's what happens with Terry Suit on a pretty regular basis in the House General Laws Committee.
Now, one of the things that happened during the trial yesterday was that the judge said he got a lot of emails. I mean, he came down really hard on you because he said something about, because of your circumstances, your privileged circumstances, you're able to have a website, you're able to go out with flyers, and you're able to get email campaigns going. I had to snicker because you weren't the one who did that, who got the email campaigns. But does that help? I mean, if the people were to just bombard them with emails?
Well,
even if they don't live in Virginia, I mean, this has got to be, we've got to get somehow something that's in the general interest of the people.
But the worms don't like daylight. We know that.
Oh, I know that.
So when you turn the rock over and the sun hits them, they all run and hide.
That's
right. And I think the judge didn't like the public visibility that was created by all this, and I think it made him very uncomfortable.
Did you think that influenced his decision at all?
I think it probably caused him to have a greater penalty because we brought these issues to the light of day and had more people aware of them. As I said to the Richmond Times-Dispatch afterwards, and it was in today's Richmond paper, I really have a lot of trouble understanding that because, you know, this is a democratic process and does have free speech, but it seemed to me that the judge was very upset with me because I had asserted my free speech rights and my right to disseminate information. And I said to them, to the Richmond paper, that, you know, Virginia has a long and proud history of that. You can go back to the American Revolution, and many Virginia lawyers rose up and spoke out against tyranny and in the hope of achieving a greater freedom for the people. And it really bothered me to think that the judge would somehow feel that I had done something wrong because I was trying to pursue that Virginia tradition of, you know, if God gave me some skills, language skills or whatever, or thought process that was reasonably rational, that I would try to convey my honest beliefs to other people. And somehow the judge found that to be highly offensive. It amazed me.
Well, not only to the judge, but you were very close to reaching a settlement with Wyndham before your court date. And
well, we would have, but they kept changing the terms.
Well, there was one thing I think that you told me when they added the gag order that Ava just absolutely flat out said no.
Yeah, my wife really went off on that one.
Yeah.
Really what happened, again, it makes a little sense that if you think about what was supposed to be occurring. The judge gave us an order. We didn't comply with that order on time. We didn't lower the flag on time and a pole on time. We admit that. But that was it. That was all that was in that order that we didn't do. But when Wyndham's lawyers, Mr. Moriarty, when they came back to us and said, all right, we'll not ask for you guys to go to jail, provided you'll agree to pay about $11,000 of additional attorney's fees that did not relate to our case at all. It was another case that had nothing to do with this case.
Oh, wait a minute. They wanted to charge you for...
They wanted to charge us for another lawsuit matter that had nothing to do with this case, that they hadn't had any success in being awarded their attorney's fees.
You're
so they basically try to extort $11,000 of fees from a different case from us. And on top of that, the judge never said anything about a gag order. They tried to extort a gag order from us. And the idea was that if we were going to go to jail, it was supposed to be because we didn't take, this is really a key thing to get, not to miss this point. If we were supposed to go to jail, it was because we didn't lower the flag. But Mr. Moriarty was trying to threaten to put us in jail if we wouldn't pay an additional $11,000 that related in no way to that case, and agree to a gag order which had nothing to do with the judge's order.
So
basically, he was holding out jailhouse in order to extort additional agreements from us and payments from us that the judge never gave him the authority to ask for.
And if you had agreed to that, then that would have been, oh, well, you agreed.
I wouldn't be on the radio right now. I'd be gagged.
You'd be gagged, exactly. And the whole idea is that, see, if you do something, and what you did for the principle of the issue, and you have absolutely no problem talking about it, right?
Right.
Okay. Why would anybody want a gag order if were doing the right thing?
Because the worms don't like the light of day when you turn the rock over.
Okay, so they basically were doing something that was reprehensible, and they wanted to shut you up. They didn't want anyone to know.
Yeah,
that.
And if the judge should come down on anyone, it would be, and I think the word is extortion, in my opinion. That's at least my opinion on it. The judge should have looked at that and said, my God, what are you people trying to extort this from the Altons? This is not part of my order. But, of course, we never heard that.
No, we didn't. He didn't say that at all. You want to hear another clip?
Sure.
It's that you agree not to elect destruction without the proper approval. That's it. No more, no less. You violated that agreement. This court... ordered you to remove the structure and to live up to your agreement. That decision, as I said, was upheld by both the highest court of this state and the highest court in the land.
You should have upheld your agreement.
What?
Here we go. You should have upheld your agreement. You should have got permission, which is what the agreement was. And is that what that boils down to a certain extent? You should have got permission.
Well, I did get permission. I don't know who to get permission from. I got permission from the developer, but his only reason for giving permission was knowing that the permission wasn't going to be enforceable, because as his vice president said, even if they had signed an agreement saying I could put it up, the covenants would overrule that. And there was no way to get permission, apparently.
But even though
the covenants, of course, didn't say flag or flagpole either, but...
What part of that did Judge Harris have a hard time with? I mean, you know, he kept talking about your agreement, and you didn't get permission, and you agreed.
Well, he made it sound as if there was some clear document that I had that said you can't have a flagpole next to your house. And, you know, as we all know, that did not exist. There was no reference to flag or flagpole in any of the 280 pages of rules we signed or reviewed and signed.
You and Ava put up a great fight. 4 years, that's a long time. $150,000, that's a lot of money. How do you feel now? What are you disappointed? Are you disgusted?
No, I think I'm just become much more aware. And again, that's why it's good to be on the radio here. Other people may be learning this lesson without having to take 4 years. I was a pretty slow learner, I guess. It took me 4 years to learn this lesson. But, you know, there's no real bitterness on my part. I'm just trying to say to people, you know, I've lived this, I've been through this, and I'm telling you the way it works. And you know, there's no need for anyone else to have to go through this. You just listen to me, and I'll tell you how the system works. And, you know, you can work within the system, but you have to have, in order to get changes now in the law, you would need to go ahead and you would need to have a bill that would not go to general laws committee, so it has to be more of a general nature, or you have to have such overwhelming public support and awareness that the bill can be passed in spite of opposition from people that are basically in the pocket of the trade or the group that you know you're trying to enact some restrictions on, like homeowner associations, developers, that sort of thing. You can get law changes. I mean, that happened with the Wyndham Flag Law, but the problem you have is you've got to have really, really overwhelming public support. Otherwise, they're just going to go with the people that make the political contributions to the reelection campaigns.
But suppose you did get the law changes. What is it going to take to enforce the laws? And there's no agency in the real government to do that. So you're back at square one. You're having to go back. You hire an attorney, go into court, possibly end up in front of Judge Harris again.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you get rid of the attorney's fee section of the Property Owners Association Act, for example, then Judge Harris can't find a thing to hang that on. If he has no ability to hang the hat on that, then he can't award $170,000 against some person that's just plain trying to assert their rights in relationship to the Homeowners Association. You know, the whole idea of that bill is supposed to be, though, gee, the poor people in the Homeowners Association shouldn't get stuck because some maverick wants to break the rules. Well, in my case, I mean, I'm just one person going against my resources, against the resources of about 1,650 other families that are making their contribution in their dues to the Homeowners Association. So if you compare the relative power, financial power, to go into court, I'm in a real weak position. I'm one person against 1,650 other people. And, you know, somehow they have to be advantaged by saying, well, you know, they can get all their attorney's fees back, but I can't. So it's really, you know, it's really a loaded situation. I think that issue of attorney's fees, and that's basically contrary to our American legal system. You know, it's called the American rule. I'm a lawyer, and the American rule is a label that they use to say that each party bears their own expenses in a court process, in civil court. And, you know, that is so American that it's labeled the American rule. And, we basically are supposed to have that in our legal system, that in order to have people feel they have access to our courts, they can go into court and assert their rights without fear of being massively jeopardized by having somebody award $170,000 of attorney's fees because they're trying to fly their American flag on their own property. So that's, you know, that's as un-American as you could ever have. But the homeowners associations have been able to get that enacted in the Property Owners Association Act.
Let me give you, some states actually say that the association can collect, but the homeowner can't. In Virginia, it's the winner, regardless of who, you know, which party wins. But it seems that lately more and more the associations are winning more often than the homeowners. But let's take the flip side of that. And I'm not arguing with you. But suppose you have someone who's being harassed and abused by their association. They do not have the fees. Cannot afford to hire an attorney, cannot afford to protect their rights. And they find an attorney who says, all right, I think your case has a lot of merit. I think that we have a very good chance of winning it. I'll take it on contingency. You know, if we win, then we'll get the association to cover my fees. And that's the only way that this homeowner would ever be able to go into court.
Right. But yeah. even a lawyer, I mean, I've got a law firm, 14 lawyers. I don't think any lawyer is going to take on that kind of a case where there's a risk of that amount of legal resource having to be consumed to take a case. I don't think there's a law firm in Richmond that would say, oh, gee, we'll take on a homeowners association no matter how good the case is if they know that they're going to have to incur $140,000 or $100,000 of expenses. Even a major medical malpractice case, I have a lot of background in that field. I was a hospital administrator and a hospital attorney for years. You know, if you can take a major medical malpractice case to trial and not spend maybe more than $30,000 to go taking it through trial on a contingent basis, you know, that's a major case to take on a contingent basis. There's not any attorneys that are going to take a homeowner association case on a contingent basis. It might be a public interest law firm that will take something that would be a federal case, that would be a, you know, precedent-setting case, but most often they're going to avoid that by saying that, well, it's a matter of private contract, and you know, we basically know that there's nothing we can do. So you really are basically without any rights. I think if an average person comes up against a homeowner association, they have nothing other that they can really effectively do other than public awareness to the press or simply sell their house and move on. And that's sad, but it's true.
The first time you were on this show, Richard, you said up front, I don't dislike associations. I think they provide a service. Do you still feel that way? Have you changed your mind? Has this colored your outlook on associations?
I think the idea is okay. It's just it isn't always the concept. It's the concept as it's implemented that's the problem. I'm not sure a homeowner association idea is so bad, but the homeowner associations I'm accustomed to, basically they're real honest at the front end. They say, you know, you can't have a concrete block exposed foundation. You've got to have a paved driveway, and your house has to have 3,000 square feet or more, something like that. Well, that's pretty clear. You buy there, you know what you're getting. You've got to put a driveway in. It can't be gravel. You can't have exposed gray concrete block, and your house has to be 3,000 square feet.
Well, why can't you do that?
What's wrong with that? I mean, I don't see any problem with that.
But why can't you do that through zoning laws?
Well, you could.
And so you don't need an association.
Maybe
a fourth
not.
A fourth layer of government, because they go way beyond that.
But they take that little foot in the door, and then they knock the door down. In some cases, they knock the walls of the house down, which is that's basically what they try to do in our case. You know, basically destroy our family for standing up to them.
Well, here's you want to hear the last clip I have?
Sure.
I don't know if it's coming through very well. You know, we tried to bring you a little bit of. You know, a little bit of what's going on in the courtroom. Let's try it.
Courts are not punishment. But I do find each of you in contempt, and I'm going to give you 10 days to purge yourself of this contempt. And you can purge yourself of the contempt by doing this. You are to pay to the complainant the certified funds no later than 10 days from today. Getting back on the previous orders of the court that remain outstanding. You are to pay additionally $8,799 in additional fees and costs incurred since the last order of the court. And in addition to that, you are to pay to the plaintiffs in damages $100 a day beginning March 2nd through March 26th.
That's where you're supposed to be purging yourself.
Yeah. And again, you know, the answer to that again comes right back to, if we don't do that, then I guess we go back again, and my wife packs a little toothbrush again as she did this time. Because, you know, that would be the situation, we'd be back again and we'd still be in contempt of court. And at that point, I guess maybe the judge would be hard pressed, in his own view of the world at least, not to put us in jail. But there aren't a lot of people that can come up with, you know, I don't know what it is now. I'm guessing about $50,000 in 10 days. Considering I just gave him a cashier's check for $95,000 not even a month ago. So
they handed you at the last moment some papers and asked you to agree to that. That was the first time you'd seen those papers.
Sure.
Right? What was on that? Was that an accounting of what they were
asking?
That
was an accounting of their attorney's fees and all that. But they did that before. The last court hearing we had, they gave it to us 10 minutes of 5 the night before, and it was for about $40,000 of attorney's fees, and we weren't even given an opportunity to review it. The judge just approved it.
Yesterday?
Yeah, well, the hearing prior to this, the one back in January.
The one back in January?
It was about $50,000 or $45,000 or something like that of attorney's fees, and we had 10 minutes to review it, and of course, that was where we had to pay attention to the judge. Because we're in court, paying attention to the judge and trying to audit $40,000 of legal fees, at, you know, while we're paying attention to the judge. So, in other words, we had no chance to challenge that either. So,
this segment's behind you. It's off to the legislature, and for some legislative fixes. Is that state, or do you think it's time to take this national?
Well, we may go federal with it. I think there's more opportunity at the federal level than at the state level, but I think we need to go both ways with it. And I think the other thing is to continue to make, you know, the public opinion campaign. People need to be aware of this, and if they're aware of it, then legislative changes have more likelihood of being passed.
Well, I'm trying. I'm here every week for 2 hours getting this stuff out. So, and we will continue to do that as long as the station lets me come in and do my show. We'll be doing the show. And, you know, now that your case is pretty much over with, Richard, I still hope to have you back on and keep in touch. And good luck. And let's,
well, thank you.
Let's get some sanity, because we've got a bunch of men out there on the battlefields right now. These guys are going to be coming home one day. There's going to be nothing left but association-controlled housing with controlled flags. I mean, you know, the next thing they're going to do is try to decide, tell you how many, what color, what shape, what size, and how many stars you can have on your flag, right?
That's it.
That's it. Well, thanks a lot, Richard. You've been listening to On the Comments.
Thanks for everything you do.
Well, thank you, and keep in touch, and good luck. And we will get this done, one way or the other. We will get it done. We're not gonna let the bees win. Stay tuned, because at 4 o'clock it's Night Train with Squire, and he's our new guild president. And be sure to tune in next Saturday at 1 o'clock for It's Your Turn, and at 2 o'clock for On the Commons. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next week. Thanks. Do